There we go. Right, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Peter. As Peter said, we're concluding our series this morning on the Christmas carols. And as we've already heard, we learnt in the quiz. Actually, that was very helpful preparation all round. This passage, this carol was inspired by Matthew's Gospel. Just for background, the carol itself was written by an American clergyman in Pennsylvania in 1857. It's based on a 14th century German legend. It's a very well-known story and carol, and I'm not going to dwell on it especially. Hopefully, there'll be a few new thoughts to ponder and perhaps provoke this morning. Now, I don't know what the new year holds for you, looking forward, looking ahead. I'm going to leave the rest of that to Angela to talk about next week. We're expecting our daughter to get married later on this year. We're not expecting that to be very cheap. This morning you're probably expecting a sermon, but you may not be expecting one to last 45 minutes. Anyway, I've entitled this talk Expected and Unexpected. And actually, this is our nativity set, which some of you may have seen if you came to our house last year. And I'm going to focus on various groups or individuals represented here and sort of compare and contrast in terms of the expected and the unexpected. But let's start with Mary and focus on her. So Mary, of course, was expecting, quite literally, although in a very unexpected way. Of course, she was a virtuous woman or girl, really. She needed that kind of angelic visitation to really confirm or assure her that that was actually God's will. And her story is told in Luke's Gospel. Matthew is more focused on Joseph's side of the story, and this happens actually in chapter 1. He's also a virtuous, honourable man. He also gets an angelic visitation in the form of a dream, perhaps more needed than for Mary, because, of course, he always had the option of walking away from, you know, the disgrace of an unexpected pregnancy. Now, obviously, these are both quite direct words from God, and, of course, they would have had great significance for Mary and for Joseph throughout their lives. Those special words from God are going to need to sustain them through long periods of ordinary, unexceptional family life, you know, the drudgery of bringing up children, making a living, the kind of things that most of us have done, and some of you are still quite in the throes of doing quite actively. But there must also have been plenty of times when they wondered, is this really God's son? Is God's son supposed to be born in a stable, far from his home in Nazareth? Is he supposed to start his life in exile in Egypt, the symbolic land of slavery? Is this really God's plan for him and for us? Is God really in control? Not what they were expecting, I suspect. Well, we'll come back to Mary. What about King Herod? Now, just see on the slides there. Angela was encouraging me to wear my my hat, but I've discovered that when I looked in the mirror, it just made me look older and greyer than I already feel. So perhaps we'll just stick with that. And also, you get very hot wearing that. Herod, by comparison with Mary, had no expectations. He wasn't expecting anything. He was just minding his business, being a brutal tyrant in the ancient and fairly brutal world. And other historical sources tell us that he was a truly awful person. What was unexpected for him was these magi turning up on his doorstep and asking where the new king had been born, so that they could go and worship him. No wonder Herod and all Jerusalem with him were disturbed. Now, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it's often claimed in Christian circles that Jesus came to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. And it's interesting to note, even right at Jesus' birth, in fact, even only the rumour of his birth is enough for Jesus to start disturbing the comfortable, the powerful, the secular powers and politics of the day. Okay, Herod wasn't expecting to have his kingdom threatened by a king, so he asked his chief priests and the teachers of the law, his theological advisory committee, if you like, where the Christ or the Messiah was going to be born. And as we've heard, they tell him in Bethlehem, which of course is actually where we started our series just over a month ago with Bethlehem. And we already had the quotation in Matthew, quoting back to Micah, which was in the quiz. So that was what these particular wise men expected. By that I mean the priests, the theologians and the lawyers, and I'm going to focus on them for just a moment. Notice that they're insiders. They're Jews, they are knowledgeable, they should be believers. You know, the star has guided the Magi for hundreds, probably 1,000 miles or so, but they need that expert insider knowledge to get them the last few miles. You know, it's a bit like the sat-nav. You know, normally you can just navigate with road signs. You need the sat-nav for the last few miles, don't you? So they got to Jerusalem, as we heard, but they needed to get to the final place. So a question for you, and not for Angela to answer, because I know she'll call out. Does anybody know roughly how far it is between Jerusalem to Bethlehem?
90 miles.
Sorry?
90?
Yes, thank you, Jane. Yes, 90. Yeah, I was probably thinking about Nazareth to Bethlehem. Yes, thank you, Jane. 6 miles, yes. So, you know, that's Bethlehem. That's the answer that the chief priests give to the Magi, based on their own holy writings, the Old Testament, which we have here. You know, and they were, or they should have been, at some point, expecting a Messiah or a ruler to come and liberate them. So the follow-up question, which you don't need to answer, why didn't any of the chief priests go along with the Magi? You know, it's a 2 or 3 hour walk, maybe a bit quicker on a donkey or a horse or a camel. And I'll give you a couple of reasons, possibly. It might be that they didn't really actually believe their own scriptures. Or more probably, it wasn't what they expected. It was not how they expected God to work, so they rejected it. And, you know, we need to be careful we don't do the same thing with all sorts of things that we're praying about or thinking about. Okay, back to Herod. He craftily sends the Magi off to Bethlehem to be his emissaries, his spies, if you like, which leads me on to a personal anecdote and an observation. Some of you know that with some colleagues I set up a company that actually Angela was involved with as well. It was effectively a sort of spin-off, unofficial spin-out from AstraZeneca. And in our leaving negotiations with AstraZeneca, I noticed that one of my other co-founders always assumed that people were trying to get one over on him. He was always assuming sharp practice. And it was interesting because, of course, I knew all of the people involved on our side and on my former colleagues at AstraZeneca. And, you know, whatever you've heard in the press, I can tell you on the inside, AstraZeneca is a good company in terms of how it treats its employees. And I could see that my colleague, the co-founder, was ascribing to our former colleagues sort of motivations and actions, you know, or thoughts that just simply weren't justified. But because he behaved in that way, he forced them to behave in a more circumspect and roundabout sort of way. So his very attitude effectively generated the kind of things he was trying to avoid. As the old joke goes, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't actually out to get you. You know, people tend to respond in the way that you treat them. And I suppose it's also worth thinking about, if you find that people tend to treat you in a particular way, in a way that you don't like, the uncomfortable truth might be that it's reflecting back something of your own attitude or personality. Because it's a general rule of human behaviour, I think, that we get what we expect. But the Christian life is about growth and development and change. So we don't have to stay in that vein if that's what we find is happening. Okay, back to Herod again briefly. What was Herod expecting? Well, he wasn't expecting Jesus, he wasn't expecting the Magi, but he was expecting them to report back to him because he commissioned them to do that. But he got paid back in the same coin, didn't he? He got tricked. The Magi were warned in a dream and they made their way home by a different route. Okay, let's turn our attention to the Magi. What were they expecting? These wise men, Magi, astrologers, they're seekers after the truth, aren't they? They were outsiders, but they must have had some understanding of Jewish scriptures and culture because they state that the star foretold the birth of the King of the Jews. And so they were expecting to find a new baby, prince, king, however you want to call it. Now, there's a lot of non-biblical mythology built up around the kings, nonsense we might call it. We don't actually know anything more about them than that they came from the east. Traditionally, they were astrologers from Persia, which sounds reasonable, the astronomers of their day. But we don't know anything more about them. As has been pointed out, we don't know how many there were. We assume there were three because there were three gifts. In Syrian tradition, apparently, there are 12 kings. Just for interest, linguistically, Magi could also include women. But there's no evidence that any of them were wise women. And of course, there's no evidence that any of them weren't wise women. And then we come to the star, and a lot of ink has also been spilt on speculating about identifying the star and its date. A reasonable case can be made that there was a comet, actually from Chinese records, appearing around about 4 or 5 BC that seems to have behaved in a suitable way. But there are other explanations as well. It's all rather beside the point, isn't it? So let's get back to the main text. And what we can learn from that. So firstly, I'm going to suggest God speaks to people generally in ways that they expect him to. And I know sometimes we should be careful about what we expect, but God's going to speak in ways that people are open and receptive to him. So godly, devout Mary has an angelic visitation for, you know, a once in all time very special message in her case. Equally devout Joseph hears from God in a dream, rather like his namesake in Genesis. The priests and the scribes expected God to speak to them through their holy scriptures. And of course, we have more than they do in that, even if they weren't really that sure about them. The Magi, they looked to the heavens because at that time, that was thought to predict future events. And so God uses that, what was an acceptable medium at the time for messaging, to guide them to Jesus, even if he uses a natural phenomenon like a comet or a conjunction or whatever. And secondly, Jesus says in Matthew's Gospel, actually, more is expected from those to whom more has been given. And that could be whether that's wealth, intelligence, education, resources. The Magi certainly had all of that. And again, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but there's some truth in it. You know, the Magi followed, you know, a small light in the sky for hundreds of miles over several months. You know, it needed a full-blown angelic choir to get the shepherds off the hillside above Bethlehem. Let's move on to that one. The shepherds and the Magi had this in common. They both followed the signs. They both found Jesus. They both accepted who he was, born in a stable to a humble family, and they they responded in worship. And I think that's quite remarkable, actually, in the case of the Magi, because I'm sure they expected to find Jesus in a palace, but they expected the unexpected from God. Okay, and then what about the gifts? You know, I don't suppose Mary was expecting foreign visitors, extravagant gifts, but at least, you know, whatever else, we do know what they were, as shown here, hopefully. and we'll stick to the meanings which have been given to us by the carol, which seem to be reasonably sensible. So we've got gold, coins probably, not chocolate ones like these, which I was hoping to get rid of at the coffee time. gold for a king, of course, as a kind of tribute. Frankincense, associated with deity, perhaps to symbolise Jesus' priestly ministry. Actually, Angela's got some here, so you want to have a sort of sniff or smell of that afterwards. You can have a look at that. You know, the priestly role, the intermediary between the people and God. And then finally, myrrh, which I don't happen to have any of. Pleasant to smell, but bitter to taste, symbolic of death and used for anointing the dead, particularly in warm climates. I don't know if, like me, you've wondered what happened to the gifts. You know, did Mary and Joseph, did they use the gold in their exile in Egypt when they've left all the rest of their worldly goods behind? You know, did Jesus use the frankincense in his earthly ministry when he was going around ministering to people and healing them? And did Mary still have the myrrh when Jesus was crucified? Was it used to anoint his body? Just some thoughts. We don't know, of course. Okay, so I'm going to sum up very quickly with a comparison. And I always like graphics, and there'll be a test afterwards. So a table is always a very helpful way of summing things up. So just to recap, Mary was expecting baby Jesus. She wasn't expecting foreign visitors, fancy gifts, or a flight to Egypt. The flight to Egypt, of course, is not what it sounds like it may be. It wasn't Sharm el Sheikh. The Magi were expecting to find a newborn baby as a prince or king. They probably weren't expecting to find him in a stable or an inn, but they accepted him even so. The priests and the scribes should have been expecting a Messiah at some point, at some time. They weren't expecting him in the form of a baby. They were looking for a ruler. They weren't expecting someone born in humble circumstances. Herod was expecting the Magi to return to him. He wasn't expected to be tricked himself. So what can we learn or apply from the attitudes and the responses from these expectations and non-expectations, if I can put it like that? Let's start with Herod and improve from there, shall we? So, hopefully no one's going to identify with Herod. But perhaps at times we have to admit, you know, maybe we've got some attitudes a bit like that. If we think ill of others, we might be in danger of generating the very ill will that we're trying to avoid. It's always good to think better of people, I think. And yes, sometimes they will take advantage of you. But, you know, is that the worst thing to risk? And then there are the priests, but the insiders, the people who should be believers, whether they believe their sacred writings or not. They didn't believe enough to walk 6 miles with the Magi to find out whether this thing was true that they'd heard about and to act on it. You know, or will we be outdone by the Magi, who were actually outsiders, but they had enough faith to follow a small light, a night light, for 1,000 miles to worship a baby born in an animal shelter and to leave expensive gifts at his feet and to go away satisfied? Or better still, what about Mary, who trusted God in exceptional circumstances and bore all the sacrifices that were asked of her? Temporary exile in a foreign land, questions about her character and virtue probably for the rest of her life, and obviously witnessing the excruciating death of her firstborn son. No one's going to be put through that particular exceptional situation again, but as believers we are asked to make sacrifices, not just to worship Jesus. And if we aren't believers, or if we're relatively new believers, of course it's great to be like the Magi, you know, seeking God and finding Jesus. I think the danger for many of us is, especially those of us who've been believers for a long time, is that we can be a bit like the priests, sort of complacent, indifferent perhaps, not always or really trusting or believing, you know, what we believe, what we state we believe, what we think we should believe. So as the Magi, as we start the new year, let's try and be a bit more like the Magi, maybe seeking God more deeply, responding in worship, and aspiring, if possible, with God's help, to perhaps be more like Mary, remembering that more is expected from those to whom more is given. I'm going to invite the worship group to come up now, and we're going to finish with a final hymn, which is not a carol, which we sang a few weeks ago, but it's got some quite strong resonances of Christmas themes in it. So listen out for those as we're singing it, and it also, of course, looks ahead to Easter as well.